Jesus, huh? 'Tis warm, I tell you, 'tis warm. Good morning to John in Northern Ireland. And everybody else who's tweeting me glorious photographs or pictures of the glorious weather this morning. It's absolutely incredible here in South Manchester for Sunday, June 3rd, 2018. It's a glorious one. It's roasting, I tells you. I've opened the windows to the studio, hoping that'll be okay. There might be a bit of actuality coming in through the window at some stage or another. I don't know, but I can't keep the windows closed because it is boiling. Very warm. Great to be with you. Sunday View. I'm going to look at the front pages of the Sunday newspapers and at one or two stories inside the papers as well. As usual, if you'd like to join in, you can do so by tweeting at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Good morning.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Right, you can email the program as well. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk, but the tweets do get to me quicker. Fabradio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Your show, good morning.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, if I was doing this back in Ireland, of course, and if my neighbours knew where I was and what I was doing, no doubt there would be shouts of derision coming through the open window now. You're useless, Richie! I've had to keep the windows open, it's really warm, and the studio isn't air-conditioned, but we'll soldier on. You won't be hearing so much of me anyway, lots of audio to play you during the course of the next hour or so. As I do it, it's coming up for 2 minutes past 11 live here in the UK. That's British summertime, and it is summertime today. The podcast, of course, and the YouTube videos and all of that will be available a bit later on for you to share around at your leisure. Jump straight in then, just before we look at the front pages of the newspapers. Big story today being covered by all the broadcast media is the anniversary of the London Bridge attack. So the BBC reporting today that the UK's determination to overcome the threat of terrorism has never been stronger. That's according to the Prime Minister, Theresa May. A service remembering the victims will be held at Southwark Cathedral later, one of a number of events taking place to mark the anniversary of the attack. 8 people died last year when 3 men drove into pedestrians on London Bridge, left the van then and stabbed people in Borough Market. There will also be a national minute silence to commemorate the victims. I've talked at length about this lunacy before. National minutes silence and remembrance services for you to stare mournfully at your television and think about people that you never met and would never have met had this event not happened. That is in no way to insult the memory of those people who died. This is pathos, this is drama, this is serial television drama. Garbage is what it is. Right? That's what it is. Does anybody remember back when the Irish Republican Army was bombing pubs over here in Birmingham and Guildford? Do we remember national minute silences a year later? Do we remember the streets filled with reporters standing there gazing wistfully at the camera lenses, trying to evoke an emotion in the audience? No, it didn't happen then, for a good reason too. Anyway, so that's the story covered in all the broadcast media today. And the Home Office has taken the opportunity to remind us that we are all, well, we're only a hair's breadth away from being murdered by a terrorist, even though statistically you have more chance of dying from a falling piano than being killed by a terrorist. But apparently the terror threat level will remain that severe for at least another 2 years. How do we even manage to leave our houses, I ask you? Prime Minister Theresa May reading from a script that was written for the 9/11 terror attacks. May said, "Today we remember those who died and the many who were injured, and we pay tribute to the bravery of our emergency services and those who intervened or came to the aid of others." The emergency services are not brave, it's what they're trained to do. It's their job, right? And then reading from the script that was written for George Bush in September of 2001, she said, "My message to those who seek to target our way of life or try to divide us is clear. Our resolve to stand firm and overcome this threat together has never been stronger." Pull another one, love. Nonsense. Garbage. Cliche. That's what it is. National minute silence. What poppycock. Let's have a look at the front pages of the Sunday tabloids and broadsheets today. We'll start with the Sunday Times. This is going to make you laugh. This is good stuff. Are you listening to this? Front page headline on the Sunday Times. Now, the Sunday Times is a Remain newspaper. It's a Murdoch paper. And its editorial policy is to support the UK staying in the European Union. So the Times leads with revealed plans for doomsday no deal Brexit. Britain would be hit with shortages of medicine, fuel and food within a fortnight if the UK tries to leave the European Union without a deal. Who says that? Well, it's according to senior civil servants who've drawn up a doomsday Brexit scenario. Now, these senior civil servants, by the way, happen to a man and woman to believe that the UK should stay in the European Union. So no surprises that they've drawn up a doomsday scenario. A doomsday scenario. This is such nonsense. It deserves the sort of treatment we're going to give it. Absolute nonsense in the Sunday Times today. Terrifying scenario. A source said, in the second scenario, not even the worst scenario, if we leave without a deal, the port of Dover will collapse on day one. The supermarkets in Cornwall will disappear on day two. Scotland will run out of food within a couple of days, and hospitals will run out of medicines within 2 weeks. Officials would have to charter aircraft or use the RAF to ferry supplies to the furthest corners of the UK. You would have to medevac medicine into Britain, and at the end of the week, we would be running out of petrol as well. A nightmare of no deal Brexit. This is absolute bollocks, isn't it? They've basically said, these civil servants who don't want to leave anyway, that here are three possible scenarios if we leave without a deal. And the second most worst of them will see us without food and medicines, the ports collapsing, supermarkets with nothing in them. Yeah. Do you want to hear from Kevin Maguire? Right. Before we hear from Kevin Maguire, Andrew Marr presents the Andrew Marr Show on BBC One Television every Sunday morning. He got into this with the Home Secretary Sajid Javid. The question is, are we absolutely fucked if we leave without a deal? Let's hear Andrew Marr and Sajid Javid.
The port of Dover will collapse on day one. The supermarkets in Cornwall and Scotland will run out of food within a couple of days, and hospitals will run out of medicines within 2 weeks. At the end of week two, we would be running out of petrol as well. Do you recognise that? You're Home Secretary, you must have seen this document.
I have to say, I don't recognise any bit of that at all. And as Home Secretary, as anyone would expect, I'm deeply involved in no-deal preparations, as much as I am, of course, in getting a deal. And by the way, I'm very confident that we'll get a deal, but it's right that we look at no-deal and all these different scenarios. But I don't recognise any of that.
Would there be any problem with supplies flowing in and out of the country if there was no deal?
From the work that I've seen and the analysis that's been done, those outcomes that you sort of refer to there and they're in the sort of article more generally, I don't think any of them would come to pass.
Because, I mean, if there's no deal, we can keep the border open from our side, but if the French don't, then we are scuppered. Aren't we?
Look, as we work towards getting a deal, I mean, that's rightly our focus. Mm. But in terms of no deal, it's important for the French and for the Dutch and others that trade continues even in a no-deal scenario, so they will be making preparations. I have no doubt about that.
Andrew Marr must be galactically stupid, as must every other presenter who suggests that, oh, the French and the Germans can do this to us. Really? For the 500th millionth time on this programme, they sell far more stuff into the UK than the UK sells to them. Right? So they won't be making any threats about closing borders and about stacking lorries a mile high at Dover or anywhere else, because you would just respond in kind and say, stick your cheese, your frog's legs, your wine, your cars and your clothes up your arse. Two can play at that game, you see. These doomsday scenarios. I mean, it's madness, isn't it? No medicines. The RAF medevacing stuff to the furthest reaches of the country if we leave without a deal. This is rubbish. Absolute rubbish. More on this. Here's Daily Mirror Associate Editor Kevin Maguire and The Sun's columnist Jane Moore, both on the Mar Show today. You'll hear Kevin Maguire first. He's a Remainer.
It's a leak, they say, from the Brexit department, David Davis's department planning for Brexit. And they say they gameplayed the potential scenarios if Britain comes out without a deal with the European Union. Mild, severe, and what they dub Armageddon. And the severe, not the Armageddon, the severe, the middle gameplaying is we'd have food, petrol and medicine shortages. Dover would begin to collapse, a port so much trade goes through on ferries and on the tunnel. And we're at the business end of Brexit now. Decisions have to be made, European Council later this month, clock's ticking down to next March. And customs union, single market, these big questions aren't resolved. Now, of course, Ian Duncan Smith, big Brexiteer, pops up, says this is Project Fear. To some extent, the reality is just kicking in. Brexit is an idea, you understand it, but when you get the reality, somehow disengaging.
Absolutely. I mean, you would expect them to do reports like that, because they'd be foolish not to, wouldn't they, to sort of plan. But, you know, a lot of what you hear about the potential of Brexit is might be, whatever. And remember the Millennium Bug?
And let's talk a little bit about the origin.
Do you remember the Millennium Bug before we heard the last of that there? I was presenting radio for WLRFM in Ireland at the time of this Millennium Bug thing. And I had the short straw. I was DJing in a nightclub in Waterford City. And I was leaving it after ringing in the new year, 1999, into 2000. After finishing my gig at 1 a.m, I was then going to go to the radio station to do the 2 a.m. to 7 a.m. shift. And all this bollocks. And I remember WLRFM and my boss at the time, may God have mercy on him if there is a God, the wonderful Billy McCarthy, rest in peace. Billy, a lot of money was spent on IT goons to come in. A lot of money was spent to try and put in these procedures in the event that after we went to the 1st of January 2000, was that the whole station didn't melt down. And of course, nothing happened. And it's the same with this Brexit bollocks. If you told Jean-Claude Juncker and all these unelected bureaucrats, these lying Rothschild Zionist whores, listen, pal, no more negotiation. No more hopping over and back on planes to meet with Barnier. It's over. We're out. Done today. And now we'll do whatever deals we want to do with whomever. From now on in, we'll produce steel in this country for British projects, for building projects, and for the construction industry. We will fish wherever the fuck we want around our waters. We will open up the fishing industries all over the coasts again. We're going to put millions of people into work. Tomorrow. None of this negotiation nonsense or any of these transition periods. We're out and that's the end of it. This is rubbish, is what it is. And it drives me fucking mad. What else did Mar and Kevin Maguire and Julie, or whatever her name is, Moore, say.
A bit about the origins of this story. So this is a paper produced for a cabinet committee, which we're told is so explosive, it's locked in a safe and is never brought out to sea.
Until now.
Until it's on the front page of the Sunday Times. But I can't remember the phrase, but it was something like cowardly, livid saboteurs.
Lily-livered
saboteurs, yes. I think was how one source described the people who had leaked this.
Yeah, and thereby standing up the political editor of the Sunday Times, Tim Shipman's story. And you see there is a quote from the department saying, look, we expect to get a deal, we won't be going to this scenario. So therefore they are looking at it, though.
Yeah, right, yeah, it's just rubbish. The Sunday Observer, front page, replace May with Gove to sort out Brexit. This is according to a Tory donor. His name is Crispin Odie, and he's a major donor to the Conservative Party. I think he might have given him about £500,000, I think. And he says the only way to deliver Brexit is to get rid of those in the cabinet who actually don't want to leave anyway, including the Prime Minister, effectively, and put people in as Prime Minister, as Chancellor, who actually want to leave. And he's quoted in The Observer as saying, there's no point in voting for freedom if you don't know what to do when you're free. What is true is that you have a whole lot of people who didn't want this to happen who are in charge of it happening. I would go to Gove. He's the only minister who is still being a minister. Michael has lots of attributes, blah, blah, blah. And he basically goes on to say, you know, we should be prepared to walk away instantly without any deal if this nonsense carries on. Stella Creasy is a Labour MP. Wouldn't understand democracy if it was spelled out for her and explained to her by the managing director of the Oxford Dictionary, because she voted against triggering Article 50 despite the referendum result in 2015. She's desperate for a second referendum. And Andrew Marr interviewed her today and, as usual, gave her a very easy ride.
Can I turn to one other subject? Because you've put your head above several parapets at the same time. You've signed
the nature of politics at the moment.
I know. You've signed an open letter to Jeremy Corbyn with a lot of other London Labour MPs, like Labour MPs from Wales and the northeast of England, doing the same thing, saying, please change policy and commit yourself to a second referendum or a second people's vote, you call it. Is there any chance of that happening at all, do you think?
Well, we are a political movement that should and indeed is having this debate. I mean, I don't think anybody can look at Brexit right now and think it's going well. So I think it's absolutely right. Let me be very clear. Nobody's talking about rerunning the referendum. What we are saying is once you have a deal, so once you know what leaving is like, the idea that only 650 people in this country, because they happen to be in Westminster, get to say whether that's what this country wants isn't right to us. So we think the public should have a say now they know what leaving actually entails. You know, nobody talked about a £40 billion divorce bill when the referendum was happening. Nobody talked about leaving the single market in the way that we've now seen the government say they want to do. Things have changed.
Liar. Absolute pathological liar. Greasy, whatever her name is. Greasy. Filthy liar. It was made abundantly clear to the people of this country back in the run-up to the June 2016 referendum, abundantly clear, that leaving meant leaving, full stop. Customs union, single market, the whole lot. Liar, she knows this. This has been demonstrated time and again by audio clips that I've played here, video clips of the likes of David Cameron, who voted to remain, Gideon Osborne, his Chancellor at the time, and everybody else made it abundantly clear that if the vote went against the Remain camp, it would mean leaving properly, leaving in full.
Things have changed. It's absolutely right. And in frankly, whether you voted Leave or Remain, surely you should want to have a say.
I'm not going to channel Jeremy Corbyn. That would be implausible, to say the least. But
you'd be Tracy Ullman.
Not nearly as good as that. What I think he would argue is that the trouble with saying that you're committed to another vote, another people's vote, suggests that you don't really accept the result of the first one. And that is lethal for an awful lot of Labour MPs in the North whose voters voted to leave the EU.
And I don't think that's the case. Look, nobody is trying to dispute the fact that we had a referendum. Yes, I campaigned for Remain. Yes, I voted against Article 50 because I thought at the time this is a bad way of doing this. But absolutely, we needed a way of doing this to find out what leaving would look like. We will know what leaving looks like when the government presents a deal. I think it's absolutely right to say, is that what the public wanted? I don't think that's about undermining the last referendum.
She's a liar, you see. Like every other politician in the country, she's a sickening, disgusting liar. And Mara should have called her out. Because they don't just want to vote on the deal. You see, if they only wanted to vote on the deal, they would say that we get to vote yes or no on the deal. But even if we said no to the deal, it would just send them back to do another deal. What they're saying is they want an option on the ballot paper to say either yes, you like the deal, or no, you don't like the deal. But no, you don't like the deal means we stay in the European Union. So they're liars. It's 19 and a half minutes past the hour. No more Brexit talk today. That's Brexit Corner over for this particular Sunday. Let's just quickly run through one or two of the other front page headlines this morning. The Sunday Telegraph's headline is Patel, Tories no longer the party of meritocracy. This is Priti Patel writing in the Telegraph when Priti Patel should be serving 5 years in prison for treason, of course. How quickly we forget that last summer, when she was the International Development Secretary, Patel took her holidays and went to Israel and had meetings with the Israeli government without telling her party, let alone telling her Prime Minister. There was a time when you'd have been shot for that. Not that I'm advocating that. Of course, no fan or supporter of the death penalty am I, but I'd have arrested her. A senior government minister secretary taking holidays in Israel, meeting with the Israeli government and not informing your own government? Wow. Well, she's in the Sunday Telegraph today bleating that the Conservatives are lazy and no longer the party of meritocracy. Yes, yes, yes. Moving on then. Tell you what, 21 minutes past the hour, very quick break. When we come back, very interesting headline on the front page of the Sunday Express. The headline is, Sorry ISIS, you lost. Have ISIS lost, really? More on that after the Sunday View on Fab Radio 2, richieallen.co.uk and triggerwarning.tv.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back. A lot of tweets. David Stanford tweets on the hysteria around the doomsday Brexit scenarios. David tweets, Richie, the sky will fall, oxygen will self-ignite, and Man U will go down to the first division. Think of the children, says David. If they keep their current manager, David, and I've been a United fan since I care to remember, since I was old enough to speak, if they keep their current manager, I'd have no problems with them getting relegated to League One. Mr. Mojo says, this is where Geldof comes in, Richie. Live Aid for Britain. Do they know it's Brexit time? Some scumbag, isn't he, Geldof? Don't get me started on Geldof and the River Thames carry on from a couple of years ago. Kim tweets, the only real source I now trust, Richie, is Heinz Brown. Source. Good stuff. Good morning to Mark Richards. Good morning to Wake Up, who said it isn't bollocks, Richie. It's monumental bollocks. Hi to Ramon. And on the odds of getting killed by a terrorist, and my claim that there is more likelihood there's more of a chance that you'd get killed by a falling piano. Anne Sheridan tweets, how you doing, Anne? Richie, I survived a huge piano stool being thrown out of a third-story window at me whilst at music college in London in 1992 by a disgruntled admirer. Not a piano, but close. I can't stop giggling, says Anne. So, Anne, you rejected some guy and he chucked a piano stool at you out of a window. Jesus, you had a narrow escape there in more ways than one. Good morning to Moinga. Good morning to Cartoon Drunk, who tweets, the French will tell us we can stick our black puddings up our ass after Brexit and they would be the right shape to fit. We need to talk, Cartoon Drunk. We need to talk. We need to talk quickly. Right, keep those tweets coming in. John tweets that Priti Patel went to the Golan Heights to a medical camp where it is alleged ISIS jihadists were treated. I say alleged, John, even though I believe it to be absolutely true. Right, 25 minutes past the hour. The Sunday Express, the front page headline is, as I said a minute ago, where is it? Get back. Yeah, it's Sorry ISIS, You Lost. Huge headline, writ large. Again, today being the 1 year anniversary of the London Bridge terror attack. I think future Mrs. Allen and myself were driving back from Robbie Williams at the Etihad Stadium last year when that happened. I think we switched on BBC Radio 5 or BBC Radio 2 for a bit of music or whatever it was, and we heard that story as it was unfolding. Now, the Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, whom we heard from a bit earlier, was on the Mar Show, as you know by now, and he's been telling anyone who will listen today that the terror threat level will be at severe, as I said, for at least 2 more years. Be afraid, be very afraid. Andrew Marr asked him, is it true that there will be 2,000 new specialist intelligence agents trained to counter the terrorist attack?
That's right. That's part of the announcement, making sure we have all the resources we need to fight this severe terrorist threat. You know, the day I became Home Secretary, within an hour, I gave my first interview and I said my number one priority will always be to keep our country safe. And in doing so, clearly the terrorist threat is top of my mind, something I think of every single day, and what more we can do.
So more security officers. What about more frontline police? Because the people who ran towards danger on the day of that attack were police officers. And there's a lot of thought that actual neighbourhood policing is crucial to gathering the intelligence and helping the security services.
Well, that's right. Neighbourhood policing is crucial. So there is more resources, some that we've already announced for counter-terrorism policing. But there's also more work to be done, as you suggest, with neighbourhood policing, because one of the other announcements I'll be making tomorrow is that MI5 will be sharing much more of his information with other organisations.
Ah, for fuck's sake, we've heard this for years, haven't we? This is garbage. Every time some jihadist runs through a crowd in a van, we're told that from now on in, MI5, you know, like, is going to be sharing more of its information with local law enforcement lads. You know? How many fucking times are they going to say that? We've been hearing that since September the 11th, since the 7th of July attacks. Don't get me started on the 7th of July attacks. We've been hearing it for years. Yeah, we have to share, pool our information together a bit more, you know. And Marr just won't call him out on it. Marr is so incompetent, it defies belief. Stop him in his tracks and say, we've been hearing that one for years, Sajid.
Other organisations, so not just with counter-terrorist police, but neighbourhood police, with local government councils. In some cases, absolutely, to make sure that there is a much higher chance of finding some of those extremists and disrupting plots a lot earlier on.
So some people, I suppose, would say that this is about using local government, using perhaps head teachers in schools and elsewhere, as it were, additional MI5 agents. They're the ones who will be passing information back to the security services, and that in turn may make some communities feel that the heavy hand of the state is too heavily on their backs.
No, I certainly wouldn't be describing them as additional agents. You know, there's a specific job for our intelligence agents, there's a job for counterterrorism policing. But for example, when it comes to neighbourhood policing, you know, I think one of the lessons learned from the five terrible attacks that we saw last year with 36 people murdered was that, you know, we had an independent, there was a review done, it was overseen independently by David Anderson, and you know, I thank him for the work that he's done. And some of the work that came out of that was to say that information that the intelligence services have, that they should share it a lot more early on, so that when other organisations get hold of it, they perhaps can do more with it very early stage.
Sajid Javid is as thick as two short planks. He couldn't find his own arse with two hands and a map. Sajid Javid. Unbelievable. Head teachers, we're going to get involved now in counter-terrorism policing. We're going to start encouraging people to rat on their neighbours, to report their neighbours' every movement, if it seems even remotely out of step with normality, or if it's even just a teeny-weensy bit different, we want you on the phone telling us all about it. It's ridiculous, isn't it? But this is what's coming down the line, you see. The very people charged with protecting you from terrorist attacks, the agencies referred to in that exchange between Marr and Sajid Javid, have quite often, and we have the proof of it, with Salman Abedi and the Manchester Arena attack, they turn a blind eye to it. They allow it happen, which is my best guess as to what happened in Manchester. I'm not saying that is what happened. I'm saying it's my best guess. Because when it does happen, then we come forward with the solution, the ready-made one. Well, you know, we have to take away your rights to assemble. We have to get more involved in what you do on the internet. We really need your employers and we need your teachers and everybody else to kind of keep an eye on you to tell us what you've been up to. This is what it is. It's quite crazy, really. That's their... Faisal has just tweeted, keeping the terrorist threat going is their highest priority. Well, it is, of course. That's what it is. You see, when this idea... And it's genius. I don't know whom... invented. I don't know who invented the terror threat level, the color-coded chart. I think it came out of America. It was adopted here. I don't know who came up with it, but it's a genius idea. Right now, it's at severe. It's been at severe for a long time. It went up to critical for a while, then it came back down to severe. It'll never leave severe. They're always going to tell us that you're only maybe a couple of hours away from a serious terrorist attack. So you've got to let us protect you. And while they're doing that, they're making up shit like, oh, we filed 26 terrorist attacks this year. Did you? Where's the proof of that? We can't tell you. We tried people in secret courts. They were sentenced and we'll now tell you who they are and we'll now tell you what the sentence is, but you don't get any access to them. You don't get any access to their families as the media. Basically, you just have to take our word for it. We kept you safe. 26 terrorist attacks we filed this year. Well, thanks. Thanks for keeping us safe then. We won't doubt you for a second. We'll just take it as absolute, as a given that you're telling the truth. Please take away more of the freedoms that we believe are inalienable. Please. Freedom of speech, freedom of movement. Please do that. As long as you're keeping us safe, we don't mind. You know? Do you notice what's interesting about that? You don't hear so many people in 2018 saying, like they used to say, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to worry about. Thankfully, nobody's saying that. 27 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Sajid Javid. Not the brightest spark in the world. So what about the intel services and the police themselves? Dean Hayden is the head of Counter-Terrorism Command. And he's just reminding us here, Dean, that, you know, we better stay vigilant and we better stay scared.
The current terrorism threat here in the UK is at severe. That's where it's been since 2014. It has gone to critical on two occasions on the back of the Manchester attack and Parsons Green, but we're currently at severe, which means an attack is highly likely. I'd encourage all members of the public to remain vigilant. The police and the security services are working extremely hard, foiling and disrupting terrorist attacks all the time.
Yeah, this is social engineering, you see. They're creating a mindset, a shared mindset, that going places is dangerous. Got to be very careful before you go places. Maybe think about not going certain places at certain times when we tell you that an attack is highly likely. This is kind of embedding itself in the national psyche, which is what they wanted to do with social engineering. These are the damnedest, tweeted me, Richie. I am ringing in work tomorrow. I'm not going in no more because I'm shit scared to leave my house. That will be the reason, he says. Yeah, this is where we're going. What about Margaret Gilmore? And before we get to Margaret Gilmore, Dean Hayden's an attack is highly likely, you've got to stay vigilant and all of that. And some of the comments made by Sajid Javid earlier on, Javid said, there isn't a moment that goes by when I don't think about keeping people safe. It reminded me of this nugget, this pure genius from George W. Bush when he was president. I think this came from 2004.
Third, this bill meets our commitment to America's armed forces by preparing them to meet the threats of tomorrow. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Yeah, neither do we, and that's a fact. That's a Freudian slip right there. I remember hearing that as it went out live. They never stop thinking of ways to harm us, and neither do we. Margaret Gilmore is the National Security Analyst, often on Sky News. Here she is today.
Even though ISIS is now taking big hits in Iraq and Syria, they are still a threat back here. And that is because they are frantic to still be the terrorist group that any young person who wants to join will go to. It was much easier when they had money and they had success. So...
Did you hear what she said there? We've got to hear that again. That was very funny. Have a listen.
Kits in Iraq and Syria, they are still a threat back here. And that is because they are frantic to still be the terrorist group that any young person who wants to join will go to.
They are the budding terrorist group of choice, ISIS, basically. That's what she just said. Young would-be terrorists sitting around. Who will we join? I don't know, Billy. Al-Qaeda, nah. Not been up to much, really. ISIS, yes! ISIS, that's the one. The young would-be bedroom-dwelling terrorists of the UK, their group of choice is ISIS, said Margaret Gilmore. Who dreams up this shit?
It was much easier when they had money and they had success. So what they want is more successes, more attacks carried out in Europe and in other Western countries.
All right. Moving on, be scared, be very, very scared. The Sunday People front page headline, boy of 13 lost £80,000 gambling online. Talked about this before. The Sunday People have actually interviewed the boy. He managed to lose 80 grand of his dad's money by gambling online. The teenager stole his father's credit card and used it to place bets of up to £3,000 at a time. I don't know how he's alive, this lad, to be honest. You know, I'm not a man who believes in violence. I'm not a man who encourages violence. But I think everything that was ever used on me, the slipper, the wooden spoon, the belt, everything would be brought to bear on the arse of that 13-year-old. Son, I'm sorry. 80 grand. Pull your trousers down. This is going to last a while, right? Christ. 250,000 children in the UK have been identified as problem gamblers. The Sunday Times have done a lot of good work on this, despite the fact that it's a Murdoch newspaper. These online gambling companies are luring children to their sites by giving them free games. Free video games and stuff like that. Bastards, eh? Unbelievable. Then you have 1,000 gambling ads on every day during times when children will be watching the television, making gambling look sexy and using what would you call it, oxymoronic language like gamble responsibly at bet365. Gamble responsibly. Bet365. That's an oxymoron. The act of gambling is by itself, by its nature, an irresponsible act. You had to work hard to earn that £5. Don't give it to a fucking bookie. Right? Right. The Mail on Sunday. Back from the dead, we find Thorpe's hitman, 70s political scandal, MP's gay lover, hitman. I've no interest in it, but it seems to be intriguing a lot of people. That's on the Mail, and the Mail is free to read online. Just go to dailymail.co.uk. moving on, 21 minutes to the top of the hour. I'll tell you what, another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that lunatic asylum that is the Israeli government and the 21-year-old medic who was killed on Friday there while treating a wounded Palestinian. No, I'll tell you what, we'll take the break. We'll talk about it when we come back.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back. It's 19 minutes to midday as we do it live. That's British summertime. Beautiful, beautiful day today. It is, and it's going to be beautiful for the next few days. That's good news. That's very good news. Right. A senior medical official in Gaza has urged the international community not to stay silent and to do more to protect civilians who protest at the border fence with Israel. This is a great misnomer, by the way. The border fence. This is typical mainstream media bullshit. It's not a border. It's a fence to keep people caged into the biggest open-air prison in the world. It's not a border recognised by any other country in the world. There's no border. Right? Okay. Why is the senior medical official in Gaza demanding the international community speak up? Well, because a 21-year-old medic was shot dead by Israeli forces on Friday. Was it yesterday or was it Friday? Days just bleed into one another for me, to be honest. She ran to treat injured protesters at the fence. Israel says it's investigating. I'll give you 3 seconds while you roll around the floor laughing and holding your sides. The young woman's name was Razan al-Najjar, and her funeral was held in the Gazan city of Khan Yunis. Thousands of mourners attended. They came to retrieve her body from the hospital where she and her friends had cared for the injured. And there was a moment of symbolic defiance, according to Sky News, as the dead woman was revealed to the Israeli positions 100 metres away. We will hear in a couple of minutes from the senior medic in Gaza. Before that, though, RT has been reporting, to be fair to them, on this story. Yet another absolute outrage. An outrage. We'll talk more about it after we hear this from RT.
Well, the talking seems to get nowhere. There have been months of deadly unrest on the Israeli-Gaza border. On Friday, a Palestinian nurse and volunteer was killed by IDF fire. She was among the paramedics tending to wounded protesters in Gaza. RT spoke to the head of the hospital emergency department where she was taken.
A 21-year-old martyr died due to a gunshot to the chest. The bullet was lethal, causing severe bleeding in the chest around the aorta. When her corpse was delivered to the hospital, we were surprised by the barbarity facing the medical crews being targeted, just doing their duty to treat the wounded. Medical crews are doing a wonderful job, and we thank them for that, for doing their duty for their people.
RT has received a response from the Israeli Defence Forces concerning civilians being targeted. Now, they say, though, that they are thoroughly examining any cases, including the death of the nurse. However, the IDF also stressed that Hamas and its organisation are deliberately putting civilians in danger.
Yeah. And if you dried that one out, you could fertilise the lawn with it. Israel's response, never-ending response, well, Hamas are putting people in danger, it's not our fault. Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear from the medic then. Dr. Ihad Yagi is the most senior medical official in Gaza, and he told Sky News that enough is enough. The international community, he said, has to take action.
It is the first time when Israeli sides are killed a paramedic, she are a female. Until today, the Israeli occupation army, they are targeted more than 245 paramedics from 13th of March until today. We are asking here, we are protesting here, and we are asking the international community to do more pressure for Israeli side to stop their killing. It is the time to not to keep silent.
But the international community won't do anything, because there was an urgent question raised at the UN Human Rights Council on Saturday. Was there to take action to condemn Israel for it? And again, it was vetoed by the United States of America in the guise of Nikki Haley, the US ambassador to the United States. Because Israel, you see, owns the United States Congress and Senate and the government, as it pretty much owns the UK government and political life here as well. I mean, what sort of animal shoots a woman, a medic, who's coming to help somebody who's wounded? What sort of scum eyes her through the crosshairs of a high-powered rifle and blows her heart out of her chest, out of her back? Then has his lunch, presumably, and then goes home to his wife and his children, presumably. Maybe it was a woman who did it, and goes home to her husband. I said it before and I'll say it again. Sanction them back to the Stone Age. Thanks to Patricia Braunschweiler for sending me messages on this particular story last night, my mate in Switzerland. And she's very moved by this and by the plight of the Palestinians and the plight of those trapped in Gaza. What sort of animal does that? Somebody is coming to tend to somebody who's been shot. And you shoot her in the chest. It's an insanity that's hard to fathom, isn't it? It's hard to get your head around how you could do that. Animals. Sanction them back to the Stone Age. And every individual can make their own stand by refusing to buy anything made by that apartheid, racist, illegitimate state. Don't buy anything. Don't do business with it. Don't go there on holidays. Don't give it anything. 13 minutes to the top of the hour. There was a brilliant report, by the way, on Russia Today about 5G technology. It was on RT America. I want you to have a listen to this. Listen carefully. This is excellent reporting by RT America on the rollout of 5G, which we've talked about a lot on this programme.
Rolling out powerful 5G technology throughout the United States. However, some studies show a link between cell phone radiation and cancer. Dan Cohen has the story.
The race is on among cell phone providers to upgrade to fifth generation wireless technology, or 5G. That would require installation of new equipment across the U.S., a gargantuan effort every wireless company is already working on individually. 5G uses high-frequency waves that support faster speeds but don't travel as far, requiring a network of antennas built in closer proximity than the existing infrastructure. Wireless companies plan to use light poles, streetlights, anything to minimize their expenses. But health experts worry about potential risks associated with exposure to radiation from cell phone antennas. Cell phones emit low levels of radio frequency energy, or RF. In 2011, the International Agency for Research on Cancer identified RF fields as, quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans. A study in Sweden found that Swedes who talked over cell or wireless phones for over 25 years were at three times the risk of developing glioma, a brain tumor that is often malignant, than those who used them for less than a year. And in March, a large-scale lifetime study of lab animals confirmed the link between cell tower radiation and cancer. The animals were exposed to levels legally permitted by the United States Federal Communications Commission. I discussed these studies with Dr. David Carpenter, director of the University of Albany's Institute for Health and the Environment.
They show a very significant increase in glioma and glioblastoma only on the side of the head where you use the cell phone regularly, and increasing with risk the longer you use it. They also have some evidence that the younger you are when you start to use the cell phone, the greater the risk.
Carpenter said these risks can be avoided by using the speaker function or an earpiece and keeping the phone a short distance away from all parts of the body. But the 5G rollout will effectively expose the entire population to dangerous effects.
You can't get away from it, Dan Cohen is saying. This is excellent by RT. When these transmitters go up in your streets, you can't get away from it. And the human health implications are literally terrifying, not to be scaremongering. Talked a lot about this on the program in the last couple of years. Literally terrifying for people. This is excellent stuff. Let's hear a little bit more from David Carpenter, the Professor of Health and the Environment at Albany University. Albany, of course, New York. David Carpenter.
The rollout of 5G is very frightening because what this is going to do is place a mini cell tower every 300 meters along every residential street in the country. And that's going to mean that nobody is going to be able to escape the radiation that comes from those 5G devices. If you walk down the sidewalk, if you live in a house there, you're going to be continuously exposed.
Countries like China, Italy, India, and Russia have far more stringent regulations over cell tower radiation than the United States.
Are regulators dominated by physicists and engineers and not health effects people ignore all of that evidence and therefore have standards that are totally unrealistic and out of date.
That's brilliant. Terrific, terrific reporting by Dan Cohen on RT. I haven't seen, and I've looked and I've looked and I've looked, any sign of coverage of this story by UK broadcast media, whether it be the BBC or whether it be commercial television and radio stations in this country. They just do not want to touch it with a barge pole. And interestingly enough, we got another letter the other day through the letterbox, of course. I think it's letter number 3 in the last 3 years from our own utilities provider, our gas and electric provider, saying that, congratulations, you've qualified for an upgrade, a free upgrade to a smart meter. Phone us and arrange for the installation. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, they won't be getting any phone call from us. It won't be installed. Not that the way things are going, it won't make a blind bit of difference anyway. Because you won't be able to escape this stuff. That's terrific reporting. And that's an issue, a topic and a story that we'll be following up more and more in the coming weeks and months on this programme. And I'm going to finish with this today, 8 minutes to midday as we do it. Live Sunday View on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 and triggerwarning.tv. I'm going to finish with this one because, again, this is serious as well. Here's a headline in the Mail on Sunday today. As more trans women who were convicted as men hope to follow rapist Martin Ponting into female wings, prison governors fear vulnerable women could be attacked. Now, Theresa May said last year that the government is going to make it simpler for people to change gender. You know, if I decide tomorrow I'm no longer Richie Allen, I'm Roberta, I'm Bobby with an I, I'm Patricia, whatever. I can just do it. And everybody else has to go along with it. That's what they want to do, right? Transgender activists demand that people can just self-identify as whatever they want. The Mail on Sunday says an anonymous governor is telling the Mail that vulnerable women in prison could be intimidated. They warned the transferring sex offenders who are born male but think they're female into women's jails could lead to women being attacked. The jail chief spoke out following May's pledge last year to make it simple to change gender and to streamline and to demedicalise the process. This is social engineering again, you see. This is about the collapse of society. But it's only one tiny facet of it. It's just a tiny facet of it. Not that I have any problems, by the way, with people deciding to live however they want and to believe what they want. But when it comes to transforming society and trying to transform the behaviour of others and inflicting it on others, well, that's when we have a big problem with it. One governor speaking on condition of anonymity said, "My fear is this could make it much harder to control the transfer of male-born transgender prisoners to women's prisons. This could lead to vulnerable women being intimidated and attacked." The warning comes as the Ministry of Justice confirmed that dozens of trans-identified male prisoners are living as women in jails housing convicted sex offenders. The figures, which emerged in a new Freedom of Information Act disclosures show, new Freedom of Information Act disclosures show, at least 34 male-born inmates are living as women in four specialist sex offender jails for men in Littlehay, Isle of Wight, Watton and Stafford. A further 10 prisoners may be housed at sex offender prisons, Bure, Roy Hill and Ashfield. Governors of sex offenders say all, or sex offender prisons say all or most of their transgender inmates are seeking to move to women's jails. Andrea Allbutt, the president of the Prison Governors Association, she has managed men and women's jails. She said, "I have seen women feeling very threatened by transgender prisoners' presence. Women prisoners are very vulnerable. A lot of abusive men in their lives who are part of the reason they have ended up in prison. To put all men who declare they are women into women's prisons would be very damaging." This is lunacy, you see. It's lunacy. This is the common sense thing. If you polled the entire population and said to every man and woman over 18 in the UK, "Do you think it's a good idea for men who say, today I am Stacey, today I am Maria, so while sentencing me, you've got to put me in a women's prison?" I guarantee you that 99.99% of those polled would say, "That is fucking ridiculous. Don't do it." The prison governor went on to say, "You get trans prisoners who are going through the transition process who look masculine. They look like men with long hair and makeup. They don't look feminine. And if they are 6'2", they are very scary. At the same time, they could be objects of ridicule to women." Crazy stuff. It's not going away. Again, just a facet of the collapse society agenda. Turn everything upside down. Madness. And again, if you're listening to the programme and you are, if you were born male and identify as female or vice versa, I have no problem with that. Do whatever, live however you want to live. But don't inflict it on me or anybody else by telling me that we have to accept that you can do this or you can do that because you decided it. No, not having it. Nor should anybody else. That's it for Sunday View. 3 minutes to midday. Thanks for listening. Sorry, a lot of tweets came in there at the very end. But I've got to go get the repeat schedule, get it turned around and get it on YouTube and Podomatic as well. Thanks for listening. Got a very interesting programme for you tomorrow, Monday at 7 p.m. UK time. The terrific economist Steve Keane is one of the guests tomorrow. He joins the programme. I'll be live with you at 7 p.m. UK time as usual. That's Monday's programme. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. It's gorgeous out there. So get out in it. Get away from the TV, the radio and everything else electronic. Turn off the phones and the tablets and the laptops. Get out and enjoy a bit of Mother Nature while you can. I've been Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Look after yourselves and one another. It's bye for me, leaving you with the Arcade Fire. Bye now.